Today is Thursday, August 13th. What happened in the first 24 hours since Biden announced his historic VP pick? We're talking about their public debut, record fundraising, and the president's pushback. Also, where relief talks stand now, and why it looks like the college football season could be split in two. Plus, how smartphones will work to detect earthquakes, and a first for both Broadway and Netflix. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Joe Biden and his newly named running mate Kamala Harris made their public debut together yesterday, with Biden calling Harris smart, tough, and experienced. And Senator Kamala Harris gave her first speech as the vice presidential candidate. Harris said she's honored by the responsibility and thanked powerful women who came before her, paving the path. Then she quickly pivoted to attack mode, talking about President Trump. Harris said America is crying out for leadership because she said Trump cares more about himself than the people who elected him. And she said the coronavirus crisis proves it. But President Trump and Vice President Pence had criticism for Harris as well. Trump called her the most liberal person in the Senate, and Pence said she'll want higher taxes and socialized medicine. Either way, it's clear Harris gave a boost to the Biden fundraising efforts. The AP reports in the 24 hours since Biden named his VP pick, his campaign raised $26 million, doubling its previous one-day record. Though it's not clear yet if it's enough to match President Trump's $300 million total in campaign cash reported back in July. Up next, the conventions, when each party will formally nominate their candidates. The Democratic National Convention comes first starting next week, and while some of the biggest names in politics, like the Obamas and the Clintons, show their support for Biden and Harris, Trump has his own campaign events planned. Next week, during the DNC, President Trump plans to visit four election battleground states. Reuters reports he's going on a campaign swing in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. Then the following week, it's time for the Republican National Convention. We'll talk more about the strategies of both parties heading into the conventions in this weekend's special edition Saturday episode. Negotiations for the next coronavirus relief bill are still at a standstill. And that means plenty of programs are now on hold, even the ones all sides agree on, like the Paycheck Protection Program for small businesses, $100 billion meant to help schools, and new funds for COVID-19 testing. President Trump's top negotiator, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, tried to revive talks yesterday, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer ended the meeting just minutes into it. Each side continued to blame the other for refusing to budge. The Democrats say Mnuchin will not agree to any package larger than $1 trillion. Mnuchin says the Democrats are insisting on a $2 trillion threshold, and that's too much. President Trump said simply, a deal is, quote, not going to happen. Most other members of Congress are already on August recess and are not scheduled to return until next month, though they could be called back if there's a deal for them to vote on. But at this point, it doesn't seem like that will happen anytime soon. To be continued. There's new evidence the coronavirus outbreak is not yet under control in the U.S. American health officials reported nearly 1,500 COVID-19-related deaths yesterday, and that's the highest one-day total since mid-May. And it still seems like the South and West are getting the worst of it. The Washington Post reports the seven-day average death toll has tripled in Washington state over the last 4 weeks, and it doubled elsewhere, like in Texas, Louisiana, South Carolina, and Georgia. But remember, those are the number of deaths, not cases. And health experts say death tolls don't really show us what's happening with the virus right now. They typically reflect behavior from about 3 weeks ago. But when it comes to Georgia, the state also leads the nation in the rate of new cases per capita. Just after Georgia comes Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, California, and Idaho. Still, some schools in those states have already reopened for in-person classes or are planning to soon. So President Trump unveiled 8 recommendations yesterday for schools as he continued to encourage in-person classes. We've heard similar guidelines before. For example, the recommendations say all students and staff should understand the symptoms of COVID-19 and everyone should assess their own health before coming to school. They also encourage students, teachers, and staff to wear masks, but don't require them. And Trump says everyone should socially distance around high-risk individuals. Though these guidelines don't outline what schools should do if students or staff actually get COVID-19, ultimately, the final decisions about whether to reopen in person come down to local and school officials. The college football season will be unprecedented because it seems like it will be split in two. When it comes to the Power Five biggest conferences in college sports, 3 now confirm they're going to play on despite the pandemic. Those are the ACC, SEC, and Big 12. But remember, the Big Ten and Pac-12 decided to postpone their fall seasons until the spring, assuming COVID-19 is a little more under control by then. So CBS News reports it's not clear how a national football championship is going to work. Some have suggested a fall championship game, then a spring championship game, so there would technically be two winners. But nothing has been decided yet. Overall, the NCAA has 130 Division I teams, and as of now, it looks like 77 are playing in the fall and as many as 53 are playing in the spring. So Sports Illustrated reports that's enough to keep the season separate. But schedules are changing, and there will, of course, be some safety protocols in place this fall. Players will get regular COVID-19 testing, and if they come down with the virus, they'll have to undergo a bunch of medical screenings before they're cleared to play. Also, things could change if outbreaks get worse. For now, though, many of the nation's proudest football programs are set to start next month, like Alabama, Clemson, LSU, and Oklahoma. All right, we have more news coming up, but first, this episode is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit, and for so many reasons. HelloFresh makes dinner so much easier and more fun. It does the shopping and planning for you and offers contactless delivery to your doorstep, so you can look forward to cooking instead of feeling stressed out about it. You get high quality and pre-measured ingredients along with step-by-step recipes, so it's easy, convenient, and the food is so good. If you're already a pro in the kitchen, HelloFresh will help you get out of a recipe rut. If you're like me and you need a little help to cook a delicious homemade meal, HelloFresh makes it easy. And either way, you get to put a fantastic dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes without any of the stress of planning and shopping. We've made meals like crispy Parmesan chicken with garlic herb couscous and lemony roasted carrots in just a half an hour. Go to HelloFresh.com/80newsworthy and use the code 80newsworthy to get a total of $80 off, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply, so check out HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/80newsworthy and use code 80newsworthy to get a total of $80 off. Now back to the news. Some positive news about the most common type of lung cancer in America. Fewer Americans are dying from it. The National Cancer Institute found the death rate is improving, and it suggests new treatments are making a big impact. Specifically, the death rate is falling faster than the rate of new cases. So even though Americans are smoking less than they used to, researchers think the bigger impact is that doctors have better tools. They've been prescribing new drugs that actually target genetic mutations, and that tends to help people survive years longer than if they were just given the more typical chemotherapy. Of course, the study notes that not all patients respond the same way to every treatment, so as always, it's best to discuss options with your doctor. Billionaire media mogul Sumner Redstone has passed away. Redstone built a media empire from National Amusements, which was at first a chain of drive-in theaters. Over several decades, his company ended up controlling CBS, Paramount Pictures, Simon & Schuster, and Viacom. The New York Times reports, at their peak, Redstone's businesses were worth $80 billion. Variety says he'll be remembered as much for the battles he fought as the successes he achieved in the entertainment business. Sumner Redstone was 97. Google's Android phones may eventually be able to work as earthquake sensors that could warn people around the world seconds before humans can actually feel the quakes. The hope is that it will give people enough time to protect themselves or take cover. Apparently, Android phones are sensitive enough to detect earthquake waves, and when the data from a bunch of phones comes together, it's enough to confirm it. The first part of the system rolled out this week in California, but it can only work if people opt in. If they do, Google will right away start sending alerts from the already existing Shake Alert system, which uses data from traditional earthquake sensors. Then, in the next phase, Google won't rely on the sensors, but on Android phones, once it's confident in the system's accuracy. Google is hoping to get to that point in the coming year, then expand it into more places. Microsoft is back in the smartphone business. For the first time in 4 years, it's unveiled a new phone. It's a foldable phone called the Surface Duo. It opens like a book and has two screens, which are designed for multitasking. For example, you can be reading a book on one and taking notes on the other. Or you could have two web pages or apps open side by side. And of course, you can use it to actually call and text people. The phone starts at $1,400, which is quite a bit more than the new Apple iPhone or Samsung Galaxy. However, Microsoft says it's not your conventional smartphone, that it's more like a tablet phone and laptop in one. You'll be able to watch another Broadway musical from home. In fact, the show Diana is coming to Netflix even before it debuts on Broadway, and that has never happened before. The Broadway musical is about the life of Princess Diana. The Wall Street Journal reports it was supposed to debut on Broadway last spring, but was scrapped because of the pandemic. It's now scheduled for Broadway next May. But first, it'll go live on Netflix sometime early next year. And that's it for the main 10 minutes of news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where we explain a word or phrase you often hear about in the news. And today we're talking about the difference between a mail-in ballot and absentee ballot. Well, according to dictionary.com, an absentee ballot is generally used in every state when a voter cannot, for various reasons, physically make it to the polls on election day. Whereas a mail-in ballot is used more broadly to refer to ballots sent through, you guessed it, the mail, including the ballots sent out in states like Washington and Colorado, where they conduct their elections entirely through the mail. So, in other words, absentee ballots sent through the mail are also mail-in ballots, but not all mail-in ballots are considered absentee. Still, some people will use the terms to mean the same thing. And that's your thing to know today. All right, thank you so much for listening today. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with your news roundup for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.